Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth drama.
All right, welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger. Tonight, we got a special, special show. We got a hip-hop legend in the building tonight. We got Raheem from the Furious Five. Yeah, it's going to get hot tonight. Anyway, as always, want to hear from you. Want y'all to call and talk to my man, holler at him, see what he's been up to. Number 646-929-2037. Once again, the number to call us up is 646-929-2037. And if you don't want to call, you want to just email us, see what's up with us. So if you got any questions for my man Raheem, you can email me, dick@smoothdrama.com, or you can go to our chat room, where we have a chat room on Smooth Drama TV, or you can go to our Blog Talk chat room. You ask a question there, I will make sure that it gets answered live on the air. So, as always, I want to hear from you. I want to hear your questions. dick@smoothdrama.com. And always, if you want to keep up with us, we want to keep up with you. You can text the word Smooth Drama from your mobile device to the number 41411. Once again, to keep up with us, to see what we got happening, events, going on, whatever, you can text the word Smooth Drama to the number 41411. And we will let you know what's happening. Oh, that's right. Caller, you on the air?
Yo, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, Black Steel? What's happening?
Oh, nothing, man. Just calling to give a shout-out to my man, Dick Hugger, the Smooth Drama Show. See what's going on with you.
Oh, well, I know, like you, you've been in anticipation of the Summer of LeBron decision here. You know, LeBron James held the civilized world captive for a minute. And now he's made his choice.
And that he
going
did.
Miami Heat. Sucks if you're a New York Knicks fan. Because, what, they've been selling that shit for how long? Oh, yeah, we going to suck for these 2 years. But 2 years from now, we going to get LeBron. They got Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah, and they started that whole thing when they got rid of Stephon Marbury. When they voided out his contract, got rid of him, that was the whole setup to get rid of him so that they can free up all that cap money to get LeBron, and they still got that cap money.
they gave $100 million to Amari Stoudemire. Now, I'm like, is he really better than David Lee, who you already had that was an all-star?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Everybody's looking like, oh, well, Stoudemire can dunk. But Stoudemire then had how many knee operations, ACLs, had the eye out. David Lee is younger than him, average 2010. I'm like, you think Stoudemire is going to do all that without Steve Nash? I don't think so. But, hey, New York Knicks. Y'all got y'all man. Anyway, LeBron to the Heat. Oh, man, that's looking pretty good. There's a lot of people that's hating on him right now. Like, yeah, okay, well, it's Miami. They only have, like, four players on the roster. I'm thinking they're going to have some players on the roster. I mean, they're not counting the draft picks that they picked up. They picked up a couple of rookies that are like Dexter Pittman out of Texas, the big man, and Jarvis Renardo another center out of Mississippi State, shot blocker. I mean, they're rookies, whatnot. But I'm thinking they're not going to have as many problems as people think picking up quality players. And for those who think that they're not going to be able to share the ball, remember LeBron averaged 8.5 assists last year for Cleveland? He had to average 30 points a game because his team wasn't that good. Now he's playing with two all-stars. I'm thinking that he might average that triple-double. I'm thinking. Yeah, watch out for that.
And you know what? You made a good, valid point. You know, remember when Jordan was in Chicago? It was just Jordan and it was Scottie Pippen, and they basically brought in other guys like before B.J. Armstrong. You know, you never even heard of B.J. Armstrong before he started playing with Jordan. Who was their
right.
center? First it was Cartwright, then they had got Pennington. I think it was Stacey King was there too. You know, and then you had was Will Perdue was there. So you had a bunch of guys that were no name. You never heard of these guys until they started playing with the Bulls. And it was just,
right.
you know, the whole offense went through Pippen and Jordan.
And Jordan, right. Yeah, so we think that this is a modern-day Pippen and Jordan. Now, obviously, neither one of them is on Jordan's level, but I'm going to think that LeBron may be a little bit better than Pippen, and Dwayne Wade might be on that level.
No doubt. And we just saw 2 years ago in Boston when they got – you know, they had Pierce, and Pierce complained, like, look, I need some help. They went out and
right.
got Kevin Garnett, and they went out and they got Ray Allen, and they put all the pieces together. Like, you know, before nobody, you know, Rondo came in, and, you know, from there, it just took off.
Yeah, can Rondo win the championship? Is he a championship point guard? He looked pretty good. He looks pretty good to me. I don't know about anybody else. And I think what I like what LeBron said was, hey, you know, teams that win have been kind of stacked. I mean, people forget that those Laker teams had Kareem, Magic, James Worthy, Byron Scott. Shit, they had Bob McAdoo, who was MVP of the league, coming off the bench as a sixth man. Folks don't understand how stacked them teams was back then. Boston with Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Dennis Johnson, Danny Ainge, Robert Parrish. Man, look. you know.
Yeah, a lot of those teams were stacked. The Sixers, they had a stacked team. When the Knicks reigned in the 70s, they had a stacked team.
Yeah, but they didn't win nothing. I mean, and that's the point. I mean, people think that, you know, they talk about, oh, LeBron sold out and he should be chasing the championship. Well, he's chasing the championship, and he's playing with some damn good players. So now we just got to see, can he make it happen? Because all the talk is gone now.
When is the NBA season tip off?
Hey, it's tipping off in September. I'm excited, actually. Real excited. You know, I think it's good for basketball that, you know, you got good teams coming together. Everybody else, you got to step your game up.
Yeah, see, a lot of people look at that stack, you know, the stack team that Miami's going to have. But you got to remember, there's teams out there that are gunning for that position. Look at Oklahoma City; they got a team stacked with young guys that are hungry
right.
and they want to play. So you know, nobody says anything about that, but you know, because there are a bunch of no-name guys, but they're coming to play.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the Lakers. Lakers are loaded. Look, Andrew Bynum. Lamar Odom comes off the bench for them. Lamar Odom could start for like 25 teams in the league, and he's coming off the bench for them. They got Pau Gasol. They got Ron Artest. They loaded. That team is, you know, everybody's talking like, oh, yeah, well, Kobe, you know, he's out there doing. Look, Pau Gasol is a great player.
Yes, he is.
Andrew Bynum is a top five center. look, that team is not, you know, everybody, oh, Derek Fisher, the weak link. Without Derek Fisher, they don't win nothing.
Yeah.
But we ain't gonna get too far into that. Because right now we gonna go and we gonna call up, I guess, Raheem of the Furious Five here. Get him on the phone.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? It's welcome to Smooth Drama.
Yo. What's good? How you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm blessed to have you on the show, man. You are a legend. How you feeling?
Yeah, so I'm told, homie. So I'm told. What's clapping out there in Cali?
Oh, you know, everybody's out here, like, out there in New York reacting to the LeBron going to the Miami Heat. And I know you as a New Yorker, I'm going to ask you, what's the feeling if you're a basketball fan or not? What you feel about this, your New York Knicks not getting LeBron?
Well, personally, like, I'm personally not a Knicks fan, but I personally don't think that LeBron, you know, alone would have made a difference and made the Knicks a championship caliber team. I think that, you know, LeBron would have needed supporting cast in order to pull that off successfully. And to my understanding, the Knicks have a salary cap. And so if they paid LeBron, you know, that astronomical money that he makes, you know, he get his checks delivered to him on a flatbed truck. I mean, you know, so basically they're not going to have enough money to, you know, to pay anybody else the kind of money that they would really need in order to acquire that superstar player, that other superstar player, or that supporting cast member that could, you know, help to bring the Knicks over the top. But I think it would, you know, actually, I think it'll take more than LeBron and one other player. It'd probably take LeBron and, like, two, maybe three other players of, you know, of that caliber to bring the Knicks, you know, to be in contention for a championship.
Well, I know that was part of the plan when they signed Amari Stoudemire. I don't know if he was necessarily the guy that would be enticing to me. I don't think that he's that good myself.
Well, I mean, I think that he's been plagued with injuries, and I personally, you know, I think he's a strong player, but, you know, again, because of, you know, the fact that he's been plagued with so many injuries, he hasn't been able to show, you know, his full ability. Hopefully, you know, that'll change, you know, now that he's a New York Knick. But, again, the other issue with the Knicks is, seriously, like, they got the dumbest front office in basketball.
I agree with you.
Who Dave Checkitz and Ernie Grunfeld, like, they, like, you know, they special ed or some shit. I don't
know. Yeah, they're quite terrible. They are quite terrible.
I mean, look, the Knicks haven't been a championship caliber team in about 37 years. I mean, even though they did make it to the big dance when they played against my man Hakeem Olajuwon and company. And,
I gotta say, that was the worst final that I've ever watched in my life.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. It really was. You know what I mean? Like, very lackluster.
Yeah, very.
So. But you know, and for the record, you know what I mean. I ain't no bandwagon dude. I'm not a Laker fan.
No,
but I respect them. I respect them. I was rooting hard for Boston against y'all. You know what I mean?
No, wait, hold on. I am not
okay.
A Laker fan. I am on the West Coast.
Yeah,
not a Laker fan. I am an Indiana fan.
I ain't mad at you, homie.
Yeah, that no.
I ain't mad at you. You know,
for that guy. But
I can't do Kobe. Like you know,
I can't do anti-Kobe.
Like now, don't get me wrong. I'm not a hater.
Right.
Like I respect dude's game tremendously. Like his game is out the stratosphere. You know what I mean? But his attitude fucking sucks, yo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't rock with that attitude. Like at least Mike, you know, MJ, when he was doing it, you know what I mean? Like he fronted, even if you know it was a front that he was so diplomatic and so, you know, exuded that charm and that charisma and that personality, you know, and befriended all of the fiercest rivals. He'd take them out to dinner and what have you. Like, dudes ain't going out to dinner with Kobe.
Right. Never.
You know what I mean? Like, they ain't going to the corner store with Kobe. You know, his attitude just fucking sucks, yo.
Well, hold on. Not only that. I mean, one, what he did to Shaq, and also...
Exactly. Like... They ain't trusting him. That's the reason right there. Like, he's not a personable kind of dude. Like, he, you know, he thinks he's bigger than the game. So,
right.
it's like, damn, you know. And then, you know, that shit he did to Shaq was on some real, real
yeah.
snake shit.
That wasn't even snake. Snakes are better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Also... Just, I don't know if you saw it, but I have to keep bringing it up. When he did that photo shoot, if you was just beginning to warm up to him, that photo shoot should have put you back. I don't know if you saw it.
A photo shoot with who?
Oh, Kobe. He did a photo shoot in all white. It's one of them. I can't describe it. All I can say
right.
is you look at it, you Google it and look up Kobe's photo shoot in all white, and
right,
yeah, it's the worst photo shoot ever.
It was a photo shoot
wow.
he did for the LA Times.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so you know, Raheem, this is my co-host, Black Steel.
Yo, what's up, Raheem?
I'm sorry. What's good, my G? What's your name again?
I go by I'm Black Steel.
Black Steel?
Yeah.
All right, that's what it is. All
right, now all we right. want to talk about you here for a minute. Now, as a pioneer, like, how did y'all get started, and who was your influences, and what made you want to get started?
Well, as far as my influences. There weren't very many cats that was really doing it like on the level to where, you know, you could really where you were influenced by them. I would say that one of my influences were the three MCs, the three original MCs that formed the first MC group. Which was Melly Mel, his brother Kid Creole, and rest in peace Keith Cowboy, three members of the group that ultimately became Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Those three guys were the first influence. And then when I got in high school, there was a dude named Joe Goodwin, who called himself Jazzy Joe, and he used to walk around the halls in the school all the time saying these nursery rhymes, and he had all of the chicks in the school following him around. And I was saying to myself, damn, dude is really on to something. Like, I gotta get with this movement so I could, you know, I could have all the chicks in school following me around, you know what I mean?
I feel you there.
So,
Hold on a second, sir. We got a call here.
Exactly. Hey, oh.
Caller,
like,
you're on the
you
air.
Caller,
you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, you can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You have a question?
Actually, really, I don't. Because I do. I just want to know a few things. You already know who I am. I'm Jackie J. Knight. But I'm just curious on what would you tell young people about getting into the industry? What advice do you have?
I'm sorry. You said you're curious about what about the young people?
I'm asking, what advice do you have for young people about getting in the industry? Should they go in with signing contracts with managers and
well,
promoters? What should be best for them? Should they look for promoters, or should they create their own websites and try to sell their own music themselves?
Well, nowadays, you know, being that this is the age of technology, the age of information, and we have the luxury of being able to do, you know, to go on the internet, and that puts us in places we couldn't be before virtually. I'm sorry, one second.
Hello?
That was different.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you,
yeah.
Sir. Was,
can you
that,
hear me?
Was that techno hold?
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah.
That was real different.
I had to turn my call waiting off, or else every time we get into some kind of discussion, somebody's going to call me and it's going to interrupt us. Okay. So anyway, basically, since this is the age of information and technology, and we have the ability through the internet to be in virtual places, you know, many places at one time virtually, where we didn't have that ability before, the conventional brick and mortar record labels is pretty much obsolete. They're pretty much obsolete, you know, with regards to the artist having the power and the ability to, you know, exploit themselves and put themselves in a place where, you know, at one point only the record company was able to do because of the distribution powers that they had and the marketing, you know, and that sort of thing. Now, don't get me wrong, it does take, you know, some money, but what's more important than the money is the manpower. If you know, every artist has a support system, or should have a support system, because, you know, you have to have people, you know, who believe in you, who support you.
Right.
And so those same people, the closest people to you, are usually the people that, you know, you wind up putting on your team anyway. So, you know, you might as well cut to the chase and put your team together, you know, using your supporters, your fans, your family, you know what I mean? And if they believe in you the way that they, you know, the way that they seem to believe in you, then, you know, as long as you delegate the responsibility of, you know, different jobs to different people, and as long as everyone plays their position and does what they're supposed to do, because, you know, there are a multitude of artists. Everybody seemingly wants to be an artist, but no one seemingly wants to, you know, be the administrators and do the legwork. And, you know, what we all have to understand as artists is it's much bigger than just being an artist. Like, you know, when you look at an artist like Jay-Z or Lil Wayne, you know, we just see them at face value, but they have a whole machine and a whole team behind them of people who have been delegated certain responsibilities. And, you know, through these responsibilities, as long as everybody plays their part, you know, you start a little company, you know, you build a little website or whatever,
right.
And in a few short years, if everybody plays their part, you'll be looking back on nothing but growth and success.
Right.
All right. Well, first, thank you, caller, for your call.
Hey, Raheem.
All right. Y'all have a good evening.
All right.
Peace. Raheem, this is Black Steel. My question to you is, you know, in the beginning when you guys were coming up, like, I'm one of the biggest hip-hop fans, I think, out there. But in the beginning, when you guys were coming up, what were some of the obstacles that you guys faced? Because, you know, this whole rap thing was, like, brand new, and, you know, you guys didn't know if it was going to be accepted by anybody. And I know they told you guys it's a fad, got doors slammed in your face and stuff like that. But what made you guys keep going? You know, you could have just quit and said, you know what, man, I'm going to go play ball. You know, I'm going to hang on the block, whatever. But what made you guys keep going? What was the driving force that you guys said, you know what, we want to get out there. We want everybody to see us. We want to take this to the next level.
Well, you know, unlike today, you know, today the dynamics of you know, the different dynamics that play a part in how an artist gets on and what makes this artist successful, it's a little different from how it was, you know, when hip-hop, before hip-hop, or when hip-hop first, before it was accepted by the music industry, before it was embraced by the music industry. There were a lot of obstacles and you know, things that the early artists had to overcome that the artists of today were not, you know, faced with. I mean, perfect example, you know, hip hop started in the streets, of course. So, you know, most of the jams of you know, back in the days, the park jams, of most of the artists that are, you know, considered legends or pioneers or what have you. You know, I know for my personal experience, there was times when if you didn't keep the crowd entertained, there was going to be some incidents of violence. You know what I mean? Like, one of the members of my group.
We got that now.
Yeah, but you know, the difference is today and from today to back in the days. Yeah, they have that now, but now, crowds of people, you know, the audience, these concerts are, you know, they're given at, you know, places like Madison Square Garden and, you know, places like that, you know, like upscale places.
Right.
And, you know, people are acting out, you know what I mean?
All right. Well, hold on.
Right.
Here,
you know what I mean?
Raheem, we have a caller. We have another caller.
Okay. All right.
Caller,
cool.
You're on the air.
Yeah. What's up, y'all?
Welcome to Smooth Drama, caller. You have a question?
Yeah, for sure, man. I just want to ask my man Raheem, as a legend in hip-hop, a foundation builder, a quote-unquote pioneer, what is your role in hip-hop now? Are you writing? Are you producing? Are you an advocate? Are you molding other artists? Are you receiving royalties? What's your status now?
Okay. Well, I'm going to receive royalties for the rest of my life because, you know, that's called residual income. And, you know, that comes every 3-4 months. And so that's, you know, that's definite. And all of the artists who have sampled our music, there's a multitude of artists who have sampled our music, used our lyrics. You know, we get paid from all of that. You know, it's a long list of artists. I could name a few of them that, you know, that we get royalties from for usage of our, you know, our lyrics or our music or what have you. And with regards to developing new artists, my son, his name is Amen. He's not because he's my son, because I take this game very seriously. He's the best of both worlds. He sings and he raps equally as well as, you know, the other one. So, I mean, I don't have to develop him. He's already developed. He has his own material. He, like, I had to step my lyrical game up to be on a song with him. So, so you know, that's definitely one artist that I'm looking forward to everyone hearing. And I have a 13-year-old daughter, Deja Williams, and she sings. And she just 2 weeks ago she won Amateur Night at the Apollo. And so I'm having some songwriters put together some material for her that's appropriate for a 13-year-old girl to sing. And we're going to put her in the studio and make it do what it do.
Okay.
With regards to myself, I'm still very active. I just did a show about 2 weeks ago in the park here for New York City for Jam Master J Day. And
I gotta ask something. First, Colin, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, I do. Now we know there's fewer as five, but really there were more than 5, 6, maybe 7 people in your crew. Is that correct?
There were 7 people in our crew. Yeah.
Okay. Because back.
But the Furious Five were the MCs.
Okay. Because back then, most of the rap groups they were big like that. You know, they were, you know, like,
right.
Mm-hmm. Like 100 people and Cool of the Gang. But how do you split royalties over 7 people?
I'm sorry, say that again.
How do you split royalties over 7 people?
Well, first of all, 7 people don't receive royalties because 7 people didn't write the songs. You know, only the songwriters split up the writers' royalties and the publishing, providing, you know, no one signed their share of the publishing away or their share of the writers' royalties away. And with regards to artist royalties, the name of the group was Grandmaster Flash, who was one individual, our DJ.
Right.
And the Furious Five. So that's five members of, you know, 5 MCs and 1 DJ. So that's 6 members. So how did we split the money up 6 ways? Well, it was contingent upon, with regards to the artist portion of the royalties, that split up 6 ways. With 3 people, it would be 33rd and a 3rd percent. For 3 people, if we were splitting it 3 ways. So I guess we would just need to do a little further division and split it up, and splitting it up 6 ways, and that would give you the percentage of what it is between 6 people. But that's just 1 royalty. There's 4 different royalties that you receive.
Well, I want to touch on that. For a second, I want to touch on that. I want to say, caller, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your question.
Right.
And then I wanted to ask you, Raheem. I know that was part of your problem. Grandmaster Flash sued Sugar Hill Records for royalties that weren't paid, and that was part of the breakup
right.
of the group. You want to talk about that time?
Mm-hmm. Oh well, I mean, it was Sugar Hill Records. You know, they were an independent label, and they were not registered with the RIAA, the Recording Institute of America, or whatever. They weren't registered with them, and at that time, that was the only way in which any real count could be, you know, could be accurately counted on with regards to, you know, how many units were sold. So if you were, you know, if you had your own label and you were not signed with the RIAA, then the chances of, you know, your your books being accurate was pretty slim because, you know, you're selling records out the trunk of your car, you know,
so,
you give records to your nephews, you know, your uncle, your brother, whoever you think will successfully sell some units and bring back the money. So
basically it was sort of like Big Red and the Five Heartbeats sometimes. You didn't know it.
Absolutely,
Big Red. Was.
Absolutely, just like that. As a matter of fact, like that's so many different artists' story. The first time I seen Five Heartbeats, like it brought tears to my eyes because it was like, wow, that could be me. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, it probably was you.
I'm sure it was to a degree. I mean, you know.
What'd
you say?
Well, I said you just didn't know that you weren't getting paid because I know a lot of us. Like I remember Lord Jamar of Brand Nubians. He had the cut where he was talking about they say hardcore don't sell, but everywhere we go they kick it well. And I was like, we all knew those records. Everybody
right.
had them. But for some reason, the artists were broke.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, well, you know, this is a pimp hoe game. And, you know, the artists, of course, are the hoes and the record labels are the pimps. So,
yeah.
You know, until you reverse that dynamic, you're always going to be the hoe. And, you know, the label's always going to be the pimp. You can always, you know, flip it and, you know, you could be the pimp and you could pimp yourself, you know what I mean? But nobody really has to be the pimp, you know, because there is really enough money in it for everybody. But record labels are just so over the top with the percentages that, you know, the way that they divide up the profits.
Right.
Mostly because of the fact that, you know, at one time it was very customary to give an artist a large budget. And so, you know, you have to pay this money back.
Right.
But you know, if the record company's promotional effort was up to par, then, you know, you would recoup that money in a very short time and then, you know, see some profit. But some record companies have no intention of putting some artists out. Some record companies, you know, look at some artists who, you know, if you're not a superstar, you're not a star, you're not a superstar, then, you know, you're on that lower echelon, that lower tier, then, you know, you're a tax write-off.
Right. Yeah,
you know, like if you have your own label, I'm sorry, I'll just conclude it with this.
Okay.
If you have your own label, let's say you were an artist, you signed to Sony. You signed to Sony for a 10-year deal, five albums, 10 years. That's really not the way it's done anymore, but whatever. So you signed for five albums, 10 years, and you have these escalation clauses in your contract saying, you know, if you sell, if your first album goes gold, you know, your next budget is, you know, $500,000. If your album after that goes platinum, you know, your next budget is $1.5 million, you know, 1.5. But they put out your first album and it sells like 250,000. So your first album flopped. Even though your first album flopped with regards to your seeing any money as an artist, uh-huh. You're not going to see any money unless they're playing your joint on the radio heavy, then, you know, you get some mechanical royalties or whatever. You get some, you know, some publishing money or whatever. But if they're not playing your joint on the radio, then you didn't recoup, so you're not going to see no money. Whereas if you sell 250,000 units on your own label, you are just nigga rich now. You know what I mean? Like you moving up like George and Weezy.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that because I know when y'all split and you went over to Elektra Records, You went under the name of Grandmaster Flash. Why? How did that come about?
Well, Flash was the one who got the deal. I mean, we could have gotten the deal as well. You know what I mean? Because I mean, obviously, we were the artists that were responsible for there being interest in the group like that. Like, not to diminish Flash's contribution to the group, because he had a very significant role as well. But
well, hold on, I got something to say to you, man. First and foremost,
what's that?
I'm kind of mad at you because I saw some of your YouTube stuff. You got some dope ass lyrics.
Right.
Man. Where you been at? I'm listening to you.
You said, where have I been?
Yeah, I'm saying that we haven't been able to get to some. I'm listening to some of your stuff on YouTube, and I'm like, damn, this shit is nice.
Okay. As a solo artist, I've been coming into my own as a solo artist over the past, I'd say, 10, 15 years as a solo artist, like just developing, you know, me as an artist. But because of the fact that I've always been a team player, it was very difficult for me to let go of the idea of, you know, still being a member of the group.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'd have this false hope, and I'd hold on, you know, to see what was going to happen with the group, and, you know, just continuing to wait. Meanwhile, all of this time is lapsing. And so now here we are. But, I mean, my ability is growing every day because, I don't think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread like a lot of the pioneers do. You know what I mean? I embrace our peers of yesterday and today. And I listen to, you know, these artists today. And these artists today had 35-plus years of studying their predecessors. So they soaked up all of our strengths and discarded all of our weaknesses. So the same shit that they take, that they have taken from us through time and trial and error and study, I do the same thing. I study their ass and I take shit from them because they took from us.
All right. Well, we got a question from one of our bloggers. Late Paz wrote, in 2000, hip-hop was about 5% of all album sales and still, for the most part, a primarily black audience, with about 50% of album and concert sales purchased by whites. It's hip-hop today. Well, I guess you say, is hip-hop today a black music art form, or is it pop? Is it okay now to be pop?
Is it okay? Well, basically, it was always okay to be pop. You know, the people who it wasn't okay with were people who did not have the ability to go pop. You know, like you know, listen, as an artist, no artist, I don't care what color you are, no artist goes in the studio and says, you know what, I'm going to make a white record. I'm going to make a black record. You know what I mean? I'm going to make a Chinese, like, unless you're speaking in a different language or something like that, but that still doesn't denote color.
Right.
You know what I mean? That doesn't denote color. That denotes language. You know what I mean? So anybody could speak a certain language. So, you know, if you make a Spanish a record in Spanish, then you're speaking to a Latin population. But that doesn't denote what color those people are, because it's black people that speak Spanish too.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we go in the studio as artists with the thought in mind to make a good record, not a black record, not a white record, but a good record. So, and we go in with the further thought of saying to ourselves, you know, well, I'm going to try to reach everybody, as many people as I can with my art. All right. No artist goes in the studio and says, I'm going to speak to a specific group of people unless it's a novelty record. You know what I mean? It's for a specific incident that took place, you know, for the victims of Haiti, victims of Katrina, but that still, that doesn't denote color. So, okay. So you go in the studio with the intention of making a good record and or a great record, and, you know, depending on the subject matter and the kind of music, you know, it reaches a certain, you know, demographics of people, and it reaches a certain nationality of people, you know what I mean?
I wanted to add a comment on that. Now, you know, I mean,
for sure.
We talked about, you talk about selling records, whatnot. I remember when Ice-T, Public Enemy, Ice Cube, all these guys were platinum without radio play.
Right.
So I don't think that,
right.
So as far as platinum artists go, like you said, they weren't setting out to make pop records. I think people call you pop because you sell a lot of records. That may not necessarily be the intent of the artist. I mean, if you just make dope music and a lot of people love it, that's just what it is.
You're pop. You're pop. That's right. All pop means is popular.
Right.
You know what I mean? It pop doesn't denote color. The reason why many black artists attribute the word pop to color is because pop means you are accepted by white people now.
Right.
Right? And exactly. And so they, you know, many of us feel as though, you know, we're selling out because, you know, we've attained some white fans as well. But the reality is this. If you look up the word commercial in the dictionary, right, commercial means for sale. It means you trying to sell your shit. So, you know, all of these artists running around talking about they don't want to be commercial, then that means stop trying to sell your shit and, you know, just make, you know, just make house tapes for your boys on the block. You know what I mean? Because the meaning of commercial means you're trying to sell. And who in their right mind would want to limit the amount of people that they sell their product to? That means you limiting your bread.
Right. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of them out there that's going to say that.
Exactly.
Yo, Raheem, this is Black Steel. Hey, I got another question real quick. Yo, my question is, you know, being a pioneer and starting out in the beginning, what are some of the most memorable things that you remember that you can say, oh, man, you know, that stick in your mind, that, you know, that just it tugs at your heart, you know, from the very beginning until now? What are some things that you remember?
I mean, you know, when we started, you know, there weren't very many other, you know, cats that were, as far as our peers, who were doing it on the level that we were doing it on. So a lot of my memories, my fondest memories, probably would not have anything to do or very little to do with the hip-hop culture, because we were on tour with artists like Rick James and Tina Marie and the Commodores when Lionel Richie was still down with them, and the Fatback Band, New Edition, you know, artists like that. I mean, New Edition came much later, but, you know, all of those are the Barcades, Confunction, Switch, you know what I mean, Evelyn Champagne King, you know, so My fondest memories, like when Dave Chappelle's show was on, you know, and they was doing the whole Rick James spoof series, like that was something that was very touching to me, because they depicted Rick James exactly the way that he acted. And like, you know, I'm Rick James, bitch, and all of that. Like, that was that dude to the T. You know? That was my dude right there, yo. Like, every time, yo, understand? Like, I seen this dude, you know what I mean? I seen him wild out, but, you know, but every time he came to New York, you know, after we connected, because I was the reason why our group went on tour with him, because one day I heard that he was performing at Madison Square Garden, and I heard who the production company was, and I didn't know them, and they didn't know me, but we had a hot record at the time, so I called the production company and left several messages saying that we were interested in going on tour with Rick James, and then his drummer from the Stone City Band, his name is Lino. Lino was from the Bronx, and so I guess he just had, you know, he had love for Bronx dudes or whatever, and he put us on his tour, and yo, that was like some of the most memorable times that I can remember with regards to doing shows and stuff like that. You know, like one time we opened for this punk rock group called The Clash, here in New York City at this club that's closed down now called Bonds International Casino. And, you know, hip-hop was very young at the time, and not many people, especially white people, had an opportunity to experience seeing a hip-hop group perform live. So, you know, they heard the records, and they were into the records, but when the groups performed live, you know, they were not used to seeing an artist perform to a record. They wanted to see a band. So we up there, you know, performing and Flash is on the wheels doing his thing. And, you know, one of the things about Flash, even to this date, I don't know whether he's using Serato or not. I don't believe he is, because he is a stickler for authenticity, so he just wants to, you know, use records. And so the record skipped, and once the record skipped, people started to boo. It was, you know, predominantly white. As a matter of fact, we were the only black guys in the spot. All the black people in the spot was either on stage or backstage as our guests. And so white people in the audience started to order drinks, like full cans of beer. They was throwing full cans of beer at us, whole oranges, like one of the members, Scorpio, got hit in the dick with an orange while we was on stage, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was funny. Yo, that shit was funny as hell, you know?
The thing is that I can appreciate some of that, because, you know, you were naming Rick James and Switch and New Edition and stuff like that. And, you know, I grew up in that generation. You know, I remember hearing those groups. I remember my parents and I'm listening to that kind of stuff. But the newer generation will be like, well, I ain't never heard of those guys. I don't know who they are. But when you know, that's why I asked that question.
Exactly.
Because I can appreciate what you said, because you paid your dues. You know, them throwing beer at you and oranges and stuff, that was you paying your dues so that that young guy there would be like, well, I don't know who that is, so he can probably get on tomorrow. So I appreciate everything that you did.
Yeah, that's one of the major issues that hip hop is suffering from now. You know, we're disconnected from our roots. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't know, it's hard to know where you're going if you don't know where you've been.
Right. Well, I was going to say that I think it's a shame that I know that VH1 had honored y'all, put you in the Hip Hop Hall of Fame, but I think it's a shame that, you know, when people think of old school hip hop, first thing they say Curtis Blow, then they'll say Run DMC, but nobody gives y'all the credit that y'all deserve as
well. Actually, you know, VH1, we were honored by VH1, you know, and, you know, the 2005 VH1 Hip Hop Honors, and you know, that was cool. But we are the first hip hop group to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know what's bigger than that. And you know, many people don't know about, you know, us being the first. I was, in fact, it's funny, I was doing another internet radio show. And it was a DJ call-in, like DJs from all over the world were calling in this particular show. But when they heard that, you know, I wanted to call in, they told them, you know, cool, you know, put me on. So they put me on the air, and I asked them a trivia question, you know, and it was mad hip-hop heads in, you know, at the station and on the call. And I said, who was the first hip-hop group to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And everybody said Run-DMC. And they even was arguing with me. They were arguing with me. Right? They're arguing with me. I got a motherfucking Rock and Roll Hall of Fame statue right next to me right now.
Yeah, you tell them, hey.
And they argue with me.
There, homie.
Go.
You tell them, hey, I was actually there when it happened.
Right, exactly. I'm like, fam, check it out. Let me pull your coat to something. All right, it's posted on YouTube. Like, Jay-Z was the one who brought us on stage and presented us with the induction. Like we was the first, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Do the math. Go research it. You know what I mean? I got the videos.
Well, real quick, who do you listen to now? Who do you think is nice? If you even listen to anybody.
I listen to quite a few people now, and I think, you know, there's a few, quite a few nice people, but I don't have like a favorite or anything like, no, I have a favorite, but I listen to, you know, quite a few people, like, you know, I, of course, Hov, I listen to Jay, you know what I mean? He's definitely one of my top. I love Eminem. I love Nas. I love Talib Kweli. I love Tupac. I love Biggie. I love Jadakiss. It's just so many people like that I listen to. I gotta ask
you this. If we wanted to hear Raheem, where would we find your
right
music?
Oh, if you wanna hear my new music, let's see. You can go to www.reverbnation.com/Raheem El Bay. That's RaheemElBey. All right. That you can hear my new music there. You can hear my new music on Facebook. www.facebook.com/Amen. That's AMEN dot Hotep. HOTEP, the number one. All right.
Hey, Raheem, my question to you, real quick.
If you
can hear, if you wanted your record, what DJ would you want to hear cut your record up? You got a new song and you want to.
What DJ would I want to hear cut my record up?
What DJ do you want to hear cut your record up?
Damn, it's a few DJs that I want to hear cut my shit up. Like,
you gotta pick one. You gotta go to the studio and say, here you go.
You gotta be quick too. We coming up on the time.
Let me see. In LA, shit. In LA, Bobcat. Over here.
All right.
What you said?
Real quick, we're coming up at the end here. We got 90 seconds left.
Wow, 90 seconds. Wow, I was going to spit something for you, so I guess I can't do that.
Oh, spit it.
Spit it. Let it go.
Let it go.
All right. I was born in turbulent times where promised self there would never be an obstacle more virtuous than I. No external force could ever alter my course or halter my motion. I attribute that all to my coaching. One man is an island, but he's surrounded by ocean. Keep harpoons ready when them sharks approach him. Detractors throwing wrenches in hopes they would propel him to his former way of living in which he had grown accustomed out of him. Roared with lions out of him, soared with eagles out of him, scorched with iron, drew swords against evil and out of wrestle poverty, fist fought with hopeless, detrimental probably, but this course for soldiers. I hold these truths self-evident. Nothing touches me when I'm in my element. Jump out the window for the hell of it. I believe I can fly, so I elevate. Smoke, piff, levitate. Rise so relevant. Reload, coming with rounds. 30 guys for pieces. Got one split pipe of a squirrel. And behold, he coming with clouds. And every eye I can see. Rise the sun and I light up your world.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah.
I want to thank my man Raheem for coming on the show. Thank you for blessing us with your presence. I want to give a shout out to my man Black Steel for coming on co-hosting with me.
Yes, sir.
Smooth drama. Wow.
Big shout out and love to my people in Dago, Jughead, Black Mikey.
All right, man. Peace out.
Peace.
No doubt. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.